Phew. Well, we've just finished recording the Business Jazz podcast, and as in our weekly tradition, I'm going to immediately ask Roger Overall for your first impressions of today's recording, please.
Sparks flew, not just from the fire 3 feet away from us. Sparks flew. It was there was debate.
We had an argument. We almost had an argument.
I don't think you and I are capable of an argument, to be honest.
You want to bet? Do you want to have an argument? I'd have an argument any day with you, Roger.
How much does it cost? Are we going for the full five minutes? Or
there were some differences.
There were some differences. There's some differences of emphasis. I think there was.
You carry on talking.
I can carry on.
Do you want a coffee or a tea or
something? I'd love a tea, actually.
Okay, if you want tea, I'll be back in a minute.
I'm going to clarify. Now that Paul is gone, I want to clarify some of the things I said in the podcast. I have a client. I have a conversation to have with a client. And during the podcast, if you haven't heard the podcast, at businessjazz.net, during the podcast, we were discussing this idea of serving your customers, serving your clients. And that when it comes to customer satisfaction, being totally committed to customer satisfaction, and Chris Brogan gave the example of issuing a refund without a second thought, and it kind of suggesting, although it's not entirely what he is doing, I don't think anyway, that the customer is always right. So I said, well, I don't believe that the customer is always right, and I don't believe that in every single circumstance you should be giving a refund. And I have a client at the moment who has behaved, I think, disrespectfully towards me. And in the podcast, it was quoted that serving your customers and coming from a position of serving is worth $1 billion. And I made the point that it might well be worth $1 billion, but $1 billion isn't enough for me to strip off my dignity and my self-respect and hang it on a coat hanger just to give the customer satisfaction. Now, the whole email is about serving your client. And the particular problem I have and that I will be addressing with my client is that I have been a servant, and I am a very good servant, and the whole relationship we have, they don't recognize this, is based on this relationship of me serving them. I have served needs.
I think you've had long enough to make your case.
Hang on, no, I had to sketch the...
Oh, you're finishing it off,
no,
are you?
No, excuse me, I have to sketch the... Long enough to make my case. I have to sketch. If somebody's listening to this in isolation and they haven't heard the podcast,
yes,
they need to know the background. I can't launch into my defence if I haven't even sketched the
accusation. I've ordered tea and scones, by the way.
Have you? Right.
Yes, you're going to have to eat a
scone. Anyway, this particular client, I have a very good serving relationship with, and I have served needs above and beyond what they thought they needed, and they don't recognise that they needed them, but I've served them in the background very quietly. And when I raise this with them, I will be making explicitly clear what our relationship is. We are...
Good man.
Oh, thank you very much, Sherry. Sorry. We are in a relationship that is one of equals, where I am helping my client to achieve their goals and their ambitions. I'm helping them reach their targets and fulfill what they want, their potential, help them fulfill their potential. The client is the hero, as we've discussed in the podcast. However, I can only do that if they agree that that is the relationship we have. If they don't agree that that is the relationship we have, then it's very hard to provide that relationship, I believe.
Yeah, but hang on a minute. You know, this isn't necessarily about agreeing and disagreeing. It may be about lack of understanding, lack of clarity, and about the fact that you both come into this conversation. I missed almost everything you said, Roger, so forgive me. But the chances are that two people meet, right? The first thing is the probability is that there will be misunderstanding. That's the probability, the starting point of every conversation.
Absolutely. So I'm seeking clarification, and in my initial email to outline that we are having this conversation, outlines that it will be in a conversation to clarify.
Well, you know...
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, we're getting our tea delivered here. But, you know, it's a very interesting point that we're talking about here. We have the question of how long does it take for two people to understand each other? And in fact,
thank you.
It can take an awful long time. Because, first of all, there has to be a whole lot of dumping of preconceptions that have come from the past. Dumping of similar experiences they've had with other people. People enter into all sorts of conversations with massive expectations and assumptions, and the possibility of there being a tiny little bit of space for understanding, new understanding, is actually very precious and delicate.
But here's the issue, and you can answer me this. If you have given advice to a client, they have not followed it.
Yeah.
And then they have come back because something that you warned against has happened.
Yeah, I know what I do. I blame myself.
You absolutely blame yourself.
I always blame myself. I always say, Paul, you didn't bloody well put your point across properly. They weren't listening. I pitched it at the wrong time, the wrong tone, the wrong tempo, the wrong pace, the wrong place, the wrong associations. I used the wrong words. Basically, this experience has been sent to give me an opportunity to practice being a better communicator next time. That's my entire philosophy, right? I've learned this through relationships with my wife, right? Every single thing that goes wrong in our relationship is sent to give me an opportunity to become a better person, even when I could absolutely kill her, right? I've learned that. It's the only stance I can have that helps me, right? The only thing that's good for my mental health is to say that this thing that has happened, right, is an opportunity for me to have a different experience next time.
Exactly.
That's all it is.
And can that different experience involve never working with that client again?
Of course.
But then we're at the same crossroads. I have an opportunity, which I have instigated with the client to clarify our relationship and our situation and what it is I do. However, if that clarification doesn't lead to the result that I want it to lead to, which is I can actually help you fulfill your ambitions, mm-hmm. and I know I can do this better than anybody else, and I want you to succeed, and I think fundamentally you have the right ethics that I want to be working with, and you're the right kind of person I want to be working with, but if we cannot agree that this is how this relationship should be, then actually here's an opportunity to say, we end. And
who's the man who wrote the book had the concept of the ideal client?
I don't know.
You do.
You do. The ideal
client. Yeah, actually, the ideal client, right? It's a great concept, right? And it is that basically you divide your clients into three different categories, right? One are people you have who you wish you didn't have, right? It's really, really hard to do your best work, impossible to do your best work in their company, right? Mm-hmm. So you have them, and you might have them for historic reasons, right? You've had them and you continue to have them. You know, we're talking now about a situation where you're a consultant of some sort, an individual kind of situation. Then you have a whole load of the biggest bulk of your clients are in the middle, which is that they are okay. Right? They're okay. They pay you, you know, you can work for them, right? But then you have this small category of clients or smaller group who are absolutely ideal. In their company, you are better than you ever imagined yourself to be. Your skills flow at a faster rate and in a more precise and a more exact rate. You surprise yourself by how good you can be in their company, right? You would, in effect, you would do almost anything for them, because it gives you the remarkable experience of being at your very best. The guy I'm thinking of, and I'll kill myself, Adon Enright will kill me as smarter egg, because we're reading this book in the group, and I can't even remember who wrote the blooming book. But it is, I know what it is. It's Book Yourself Solid. Book Yourself Solid is the book, and I forget who wrote it. But the idea is that what he recommends, that your overall approach and the approach of that book is, you aim to convert the people in the middle to become ideal clients. It's a method of converting people who are okay clients into being ideal clients. And basically, you drop all the clients who are getting in the way, right? You know, they are ideal clients for somebody else, right? So the person who drives you mad, Roger, might be actually my ideal client, right? They might be ideal for me, right? They might have the, in their company, I might really flourish, right? But they restrict you, they cause you to have sleepless nights, they cause you worry, they cause your self-confidence to plummet, they cause you to have massive amounts of self-doubt, and they cause you to make mistakes. Right, so those people you give to me, right? And the people I have who are fit that kind of category, I might say, look, you refer them to somebody else. But there is no judgment about right, fault, dignity, self-worth, and blame. None of those words ever come into the dialogue in my head, right? What comes in the head is, they're not ideal for me, they are ideal for somebody else, refer them on.
They have to come into your head, because how do you gauge them otherwise as not being ideal for you? If they don't provide you with negative feelings, how do you make
No one ever provides me with negative feelings. The only person who provides me with feelings is myself. Right? Nobody else causes me to feel anything, right? I feel things in their company. I own the feelings, nothing whatsoever to do with them.
Wouldn't you then say, okay, rather than getting rid of the clients, because they can't do anything about the situation, it's all me, I need to change. Why not acknowledge that these people make me feel this particular way, and therefore it is better for me to, and better for them, terminate the relationship? Rather than saying, okay, it's me, I'm interpreting these things, because as soon as you say, I can interpret these things, it leads you down the line of saying, well, I can also change how I interpret these things and keep the relationship going, even though it's causing me distress.
Do you know what this is about? This is not about, you know, who's right and who's wrong, but it's all about what do you personally and what do I personally find helpful as a mindset for negotiating the complexity of ambiguity, uncertainty, chaos, lack of control, you know, unpredictability, right? What kind of mindset helps me, and what kind of mindset helps you? And the only thing I care about is that you find a mindset that will help you to negotiate that. You know, that's all that I'm interested in doing in talking with you about it, which is, you know, it would be great if it's great to be in the company of somebody who has a mindset which really helps them to make sense of the world. And, you know, my way is my way. Your way is your way. And, you know, the wonderful thing is, if we're both happy in our own ways, we're likely to have a very good dialogue than if we're each trying to persuade each other that our way is best.
I agree. I think it's absolutely right, because you can only work from your own experience, and you can only as you were saying there before, your ideal clients are not going to be my ideal clients, and vice versa. Well, there might be some overlap, but you have to be honest to. So as you say, you have a way of dealing with it. I have a way of dealing with running, but both those ways, I would guess, are built on principles and a foundation of, this is who I am, and this is what I want to achieve, and this is what I'm comfortable with. How you internalize that, how you process it internally, and how you deal with situations, all flows from that, from, this is what I am comfortable with. So my response in this particular situation is to do an element of what you're saying, see it as an opportunity, but I'm happy to see it as an opportunity to redefine and even end the relationship as well. So I don't necessarily look at it as saying, okay, they are absolutely right. My own stance, and as you say, it's not right or wrong, and it doesn't mean that your way of doing it is different and therefore wrong, but my own way of saying is this what I want? Does this fit with how I believe a client relationship should be? If it isn't, and I've reached that stage in my life now where I am brave enough to say, do you know what, I think it would be better for both of us to go our separate ways.
Okay, I think we should go our separate ways in this particular audio booth. if that's okay with you.
Yes.
Yeah? I think we've... look, but in terms of reviewing it, there's an important feature of it. I don't know if you mentioned it. This week's audioboo is particularly long. Or not audioboo. This week's Business Jazz podcast is especially long.
Yeah.
It's what, 53 minutes we recorded?
50-ish, yeah.
50-ish, right. So we have to make a decision about whether we cut it back and only share 30 minutes of it. Whether we do an appendix, put 30 minutes in the podcast and have an appendix podcast, or whether we or what we're going to do. So this is a kind of a how on earth did we end up going on so long? Who lost control?
No, well, we didn't lose control. Well, in a way we did.
Yeah.
This was the first podcast where you and I disagreed on... Well, not disagreed on something, because consequently, actually, we're saying the same thing but from different perspective, and isn't that nearly always the case? But in the podcast, we have different views on things, and even in the podcast, I had a different view on what Chris was saying, or, as you were intonating, what I understood Chris to be saying. So then it's much easier to have a half-hour podcast where we're going, yes, isn't this great, isn't this fantastic, thumbs up, we agree. But as soon as you say, well, hang on a minute, I'm not so sure, you enter into a different realm where time slips away more easily, because you're having a much more in-depth, much more concentrated, immersive, I wouldn't say combative, but... Before you can move on, it's much easier to say, I have an example that supports what you're saying, Paul. We move on. If I say, I have an example that is contrary to what you're saying, Paul, it stops, because we're going to dwell on that. We're going to talk about that. And I think that's what's happened. For the first time, we've had more of a conversation along the lines of, yes, but I'm not sure I fully agree.
How do jazz musicians handle it, when they're actually performing? And somebody, now let's not even bother to try to answer it, right? But that issue must be the same for jazz musicians, you know?
Must be.
Okay. Thanks very much for this review. Mm.